And that's the Kiki music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And it's a new year, and in a continuation of what's actually becoming a tradition, we'll deal today with our New Year's resolutions. We'll set our goals for this year and look back on how we did with the things we asked of ourselves last year. Then, like we're reading the tea leaves at the bottom of the cultural cup, we'll continue our 2013 focus with some predictions for the next 12 months. And of course, as always, we'll close with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
Happy New Year, Stephen.
Happy New Year to you too, Holmesy.
Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the movies editor for NPR.org.
Happy New Year, Trey.
Yay.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Happy New Year, Glenn.
And to you.
So we talked last year at this time about New Year's resolutions, and we thought that the first thing we should do is check in on everyone's previous resolution and hope to drive them forward with a new resolution. I'm going to start with Stephen.
All right.
Stephen, do you remember what your resolution was last year?
Well, you know, at first I didn't. And I can say this with some certainty because I had written down what I was going to resolve for this year, and it was the exact same thing.
Oh, nice.
And then I went back and listened and realized that I had to come up with something else. But let's hear what I picked. What I want to do more in 2012 is just, the word I kept coming back to is more. Mm-hmm. I want to listen to more music. I want to watch more movies. I want to watch more TV. I want to read more books. I want to spend less time with people. No,
talking my language.
I want to push the boundaries of what I consume and just embrace as much stuff as possible. And now, because my work life... And
Does my voice really sound like that?
Yeah, it does. It does. So instead of doing any of that, you bought more video games.
Right. I did not resolve to buy a multicade.
How did it go, your resolution?
You know, in a sense, I kind of deliberately picked something vague that I could say that I did.
Yeah.
A spoiler alert. Two of us picked very vague, namby-pamby, wussy, hard-to-disprove resolutions.
Right.
Two of us were highly specific.
Go ahead.
But in general, you know, one thing that I was, I think, very successful at this past year that I think served me well, that I was really, really glad I did, was I did a lot more writing about music. My focus shifted a little bit away from editing a ton of other people's writing, and I cranked out a lot of copy, which meant listening to records, doing a little bit more of a deep dive
on
a lot of big albums that came out. And that helped me kind of feel more fully immersed in music. And I was really glad that I did that. Now, part of saying, well, I completed the task is really, you can also say, I really wish I had done more. I wish I had dug more into television. I wish I had gone to more movies. I wish I had done more of everything that I like doing. I wish I'd spent more time with family. I wish I'd spent more time with friends.
You know, I just got finished reading in Slate that you can read 365 books a year if you want.
Provided that pop is hopped on in each one of those books, I will say that that is true of me. But I think that it's sort of what we all wish for. I mean, I think it's what we all wish for out of our lives. And when you sort of stop and assess your life, you just want more of it. You want to, you know, more experiences and more things that make you happy and more discoveries and more adventure and whatever. But it's certainly a big part of what I kind of root for in a given year. And I always like to start each year with just a buffet of music discovery as much as possible.
So aside from repeating that resolution and remaining, I don't mean anything particularly snarky by that.
No.
Aside from remaining committed to that principle, what do you have on your docket for 2013?
Well, first of all, at the end of next year, I want to have no one say to me, I hope next year is better. Because I actually heard that at one point, like late in the year. I hope next year is better for you. And I sort of felt like, you know what? My life is just fine.
Were you like at a McDonald's or something?
Yeah, it was Christmas Eve.
It was Christmas Eve.
I was buying a gordita. But I think in general that is a personal resolution that mostly entails complaining less.
Mm-hmm.
But pop culturally, what I want to do in 2013 is I want to catch up to the year 2013 in terms of the technology that one uses to consume entertainment.
So you want to buy yourself toys?
No. There's something called a CD player. No. I've already worked toward this by buying and then not installing a Roku box.
Yeah, I can do that for you.
So that I can, stream this thing called the
internet. I can do that for you, but you have to let me in your house.
Ooh. That brings me to another news. Change locks.
Change locks.
But not only Roku, but also I am still one of the world's last, not the world's last, let's all stop and assess our privilege. I'm one of the lucky people who could have acquired TiVo and did not.
You need a DVR, buddy.
I need a DVR. I've been, sort of late in the year as part of a project that we've been working on at NPR Music, kind of dabbling in different music services and sort of being conversant in what's out there. I've spent a little bit more time on your Spotify's and your RDO's and your Songza's. Mm-hmm. But I want to be fully conversant in as many ways to consume entertainment as possible and not be left sitting there like, what is an iPad? Not that I need more gadgets and bullcrap. I just want easier ways to meet the goal of more.
Trey Graham, what did you resolve last year? Do you remember?
I do, because I went back and listened to it. Mm-hmm. And I am actually reasonably pleased with what I am going to argue is the outcome of that resolution. But first, but maybe we should hear what it is.
Okay.
My resolution is that in my pop culture diet, I want a little less junk food and more solid nutrition. And I want to make room in my life for the things that you and some of the listeners of the podcast have been enthusiastic about. I want to make room for things like Breaking Bad and The Good Wife. Maybe what I want to say is not less junk food, but fewer small things so that I can make room for things that require a bit more commitment.
Okay, that sounds like a good resolution. How'd it go?
So Breaking Bad, yes. Mm-hmm. First two seasons, anyway, and got the rest sort of backed up in my queue. Good Wife, not so much. Don't have any particular objection to it, just haven't gotten to it. But when it comes to the larger notion of consuming fewer small chunks of pop culture junk food and making room for larger quantities of things that are worthier or, I don't know, high and low culture that required a bigger commitment. This came up because I had confessed that I had had the Rufus Wainwright Judy sitting on my coffee table for 9 months,
which I still don't
at that
believe.
Point. Would you believe I still haven't finished watching it?
Really?
A year
yes,
later?
Yes, because of all the things that I said I was going to do that I didn't
right?
do.
I can't claim that I've delivered on the first half of the promise, which is cutting out the smaller chunks of stuff, because I'm still consuming an awful lot of half-hour and hour-long TV shows. But I have made room in my life for bigger chunks. I've been to New York 4 times this year for theater and some fairly substantial plays, which were great. I am making my way steadily through the massive 2-volume Stephen Sondheim thing that isn't quite a memoir, but it's his sort of review of his career
yes,
and his
I
approach
like that
to writing. And I've sort of begun delivering on a commitment I made to myself late in the year, which was to see more live music. And that's going to pivot around and be my resolution for this year is, since I've been working in the room with the NPR music team, which is awesome, and reading their year-end lists, which are awesome, I've discovered a lot of fascinating new artists. Also through things like Linda's Begging the Public for Joy Spotify playlist, which is awesome. But for years and years, I just haven't been going to live concerts. And started doing it last year, saw a couple of amazing things, including Scissor Sisters and Willie Nelson Live. So I'm hoping to do a lot more of that this year.
So that's your big one for this year?
That's my big one for this year.
Glenn Weldon, what was your resolution last year? Do you remember?
I do, but let's listen anyway. The resolution I have for this year, it's personal and it's boring, which in my case is redundant. It has to do with going to the gym, and it's not really pop culture. And as listeners cannot partake in it, I do not consider it a popular culture resolution, therefore I will not bring it up on the show. Hey, Trey Graham.
Mockery of your not going to the gym.
The one that actually is remotely pop culture is the one, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I'm writing a book.
Oh, good God.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it turns out I'm writing a book.
I did not know.
It's a cultural history of Superman, and it's due with the publisher in April, and I'm right now on the year 1938. So, so I've got a day job I can't take time away from, and I've got a lot of writing projects I've put on hold, and there's so many video games I want to play that I can't touch. Skyrim, I can't wait to play Skyrim, and
Batman Arkham City. I can't wait to play these games, but I can't touch them. But I do have
I touched them, but that really wasn't my resolution. My resolution was to finish the damn book. Mm-hmm. And I did that. I think that might have been one of the early I'm writing a book. So pop culture history there. But I did finish the damn book with the aid of an app that I mentioned on that show,
yeah.
Freedom, which disconnects your computer from the internet, which
unfortunately
forces you to read Jonathan Franzen.
Yeah, well, not quite.
And unfortunately, that means your book is incredibly poorly researched.
Yeah, I got around that by doing the research later and sort of stuffing it in. But the resolution I have for this year is to metaphorically and literally get off the couch more in an environment, a physical environment that rewards inertia and indolence, and certainly a cultural environment which, you know, the trend of just having things delivered to your television as you can just sit there is only going to increase this year. It's only going to get easier and easier and easier. I feel the need, a very strong need, to fight against that. So one way that I'll do that is with the advice of one Trey Graham, we started going out to the Kennedy Center. They have very cheap seats, and I started going to see classical music. I want to do more of that this year. I do not understand classical music, and consequently, because I don't understand it, I find much of it boring. But I will learn. Now, maybe it helped when Trey gave me some advice about going to see the Symphony or the Philharmonic. I'm still not clear on the difference between
the
those
symphony.
Two. Okay, thank you. Which is to, you know, what to look for. What do I look for is just a bunch of stuff. People up there in performance blacks, as I've heard that they're called. And Trey pointed out that I should be looking for the brass section to dump their spit out onto the floor, which I looked for, and they do.
Oh, yeah. I have seen musicians empty their spit valves onto the carpet in front of Bob Boylan's desk.
That's awesome. Indeed. And gross. High art is gross. Another thing I looked for on Trey's advice was to see if the musicians are looking at their sheet music or looking at the conductor. If they're looking at the sheet music, that means, in Trey's explanation, that they don't trust the conductor completely. I thought that was cool. But my question for you, Trey Graham, is why don't they have cantilevered or at least tiered stages? Because when I'm at the symphony, I'm just seeing a bunch of violinists being violinists. I'm not seeing the people in the back. And from a process thing, it seems like you could get more interest if you could actually see what everybody's doing. Is it an acoustic thing?
I think it's mostly a tradition thing, but I think I've seen orchestras arrayed on, you know, low risers. You wouldn't want to stagger them very much.
Why not?
Well, they need to hear each other.
Stack them like cordwood.
Exactly.
More efficient, for one thing.
This is something I have to admit I don't have canonical knowledge of. So I think we should ask the listeners to come to the Facebook page and tell you if those of us, and I know there are several people, including John Allen Conrad, who Linda knows as well, who know these things.
Who might know the answer to this, the actual answer.
Yes, the actual real answer to this.
Imagine that. So, you know, if you don't have a Kennedy Center in your town, you have a school of music probably, you have a university that you can go and see cheap stuff at, so that's what we're going to do. The other part of getting off the couch is that, for example, I've been very lucky in the last few months to get offered to write for various outlets that I respect greatly, and I've learned over the course of the last couple of months that my default answer is no. Mm. My default answer is, I'm kind of busy. And the most recent time this happened, I was two sentences into the I really don't have time email before I was like, what? It was like I awoke from a blackout because it was just autonomic. It was just, sorry, can't do. But, you know, that's ridiculous. Why am I doing that?
Don't ever get your Pulitzer that way.
Well, that's neither here nor there. But what is just, you know, opportunity is not a lengthy visitor. And it just doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to try to get past this reflexive indolence, this reflexive inertia in pretty much all phases of my life. Now, that means I will have to become a fundamentally different person. But let's fingers crossed.
So you will say yes.
Nah, I don't put it like that. That sounds gross. But I will say, no, I don't have time. Less.
Well, you know what, Glenn Weldon? I'm going to add a little postscript to my New Year's resolution, and I'm going to hereby resolve in front of God and all our listeners that I will read your book this year.
Oh, hey.
He doesn't believe you.
I don't, but that's nice. Thank you.
So I also made actually a couple of resolutions last year. I am a little bit more of a concrete resolution maker than some/any of you.
Wait a minute.
But I don't know. Finishing your own book, I mean, that was a contract. Anyway, let's hear mine. I saw this year about 70 2011
movie releases. And
that's it? It feels like you saw more.
This year's movies. Oh. I saw about 70.
It's still 1.5 a week. That's
well, and you saw plenty of older movies in repertory.
Yes, absolutely. Right. That's true. I'm going to try to get that up to 100 this year. And of course, I'm not primarily a movie critic, at least not to the exclusion of other things. I have a whole bunch of, you know, beats that I am trying to stay on top of. So it is tough to balance, but I'm going to try to push that up to 100 to 2012 movies. And I also, my big reading resolution is that I'm going to make myself finish The Marriage Plot, which has won all kinds of awards and which I am about halfway through and it is killing me.
Yeah.
It is like drinking poison. It's so unpleasant. Okay. I have seen thus far, I saw in 2012, I saw 106.
Nice. 106 movies that were 2012 releases.
Yes. Awesome.
You saw 106. Yes. That is not counting, does that count Lifetime movies?
No, it doesn't count. It counts. It counts anything that got a U.S. release in 2012 or that I saw in 2012 and hasn't had a U.S. release. In other words, stuff I saw at festivals
That's completely legit.
So 106.
That is awesome.
The funny thing was, according to the count that I was keeping, the actual 100th movie on my list, according to the count that I was keeping, was Safe House with Ryan Reynolds and Denzel Washington, which is absolutely awful, I thought. Just not a good movie at all. I mean, Denzel Washington is good and all that
but
stuff.
But you never said, well, I have to see 100 good movies.
No, and I definitely, the approach that I used was sort of a dual approach. One is I kept an eye on the yearly box office and tried to encourage myself to see some movies that a lot of people saw, even if I wouldn't necessarily go see them. I gave myself a lot of permission not to see sequels and things like that that I didn't care about the other stuff. But for example, I saw Ted, which I probably wouldn't have seen otherwise, but for this
for the fact that it was a gigantic hit.
And you know, I didn't really like it. It's not my thing, but I didn't dislike it as much as I thought I might. But I also made use of a lot of other critics' lists. I got a couple of very helpful lists from Scott Tobias, who Scott and I have some aligned tastes and some massively not aligned tastes. And so that's a really good way for me to make sure that I'm seeing at least some things that are a little bit different. So I did see 106.
That is excellent. You just win. You pass.
I made my goal. Now, as to The Marriage Plot.
Yes.
The thing I will say about that, I didn't do it, but I have absolutely no regrets about that because two things were happening with my decision at that time to finish that book. One is I've already done this thing. It's going to be wasted time unless I keep doing it more. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, it was essentially a forward-looking resolution based on something I had done that I regretted, right? And the other thing is, wanting to be judged by other people in a positive rather than a negative way. Rather than as a person who dropped The Marriage Plot in the middle, I wanted to be a person who finished The Marriage Plot. It is remarkable how those two things sum up exactly what I'm trying not to do going forward in 2013.
It would be like me resolving to watch American Idol.
I do not want to run any of my life based on wishing for people to hold me in higher regard, which is a terrible habit.
Right.
Partly because I'm way too old for anyone who does not already hold me in a high regard to change their mind other than fortuitously.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole thing of I'm going to improve myself in some way that's going to make up for something I wish I hadn't done is something that we all run into, I think, in all aspects of life.
To double down on a bad bet.
And it is not, that is not self-improvement. You heard me say it's like drinking poison. And it's like I drank half the glass of poison.
Exactly. Oh, this milk is sour. Try this.
If I don't drink the rest so that at least I can say I drank a whole glass of poison and people will be impressed, then it's I just drank a half a glass of poison for nothing. That's a terrible way to think about other things than books, right? So I embrace the fact that I decided not to do that. In fact, one of my resolutions on a personal level is to not be the kind of person who would ever make that resolution.
Right. Your glass of poison is always half full.
<It's true>. Thank you, Glenn Weldon.
Wow.
So I only actually carried out one of those resolutions, but I feel very good about which one it was, yeah. and I feel yeah. very good about the decision to drop the other one. For this year, I really do, despite the business of dropping the marriage plot, I really do want to read more. I really do want to read more books when I sit down and for some reason get myself to take time from the tremendous amount of film and television that I tend to take time for. I tend to really enjoy it, and I tend to remind myself, I should read more books, right? So I thought, how will I read some books? What will be a good way for me to decide that I'm going to read some books? And to read some good books and some interesting books, and again, make sure that I'm not just reading the books that I would most naturally gravitate to, which are not necessarily going to be the ones that are going to be the most surprising and wonderful. So I decided that I would draft as my Scott Tobias of books, Parul Sehgal.
Yeah. Oh, that's smart.
Yay.
I haven't asked her yet. She's going to do this for me because we're pals, you mm-hmm. know. We're like this. You can't see it. But So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have her recommend books to me, and I'm going to resolve to read 10 books recommended to me by my friend, Parul Sehgal, now an editor at the New York Times Book Review.
And a former frequent guest on this
and
podcast.
And a former guest on this podcast. I know many of you miss her terribly. We miss her terribly.
We do.
But I am going to draft her to be my spirit guide.
Your personal books concierge.
My personal books concierge. And she will do it. You know she will.
I know she will.
Absolutely.
And she will do this for me. And I will do what she says. She will be the boss of me, books-wise.
Now, can the rest of us coach her to pick, to right? sort of punk you?
No.
No.
She wouldn't listen to
she
you.
Wouldn't.
She wouldn't listen to you. She'll have my back. She'll have my back. So that's my A1 resolution for this year. My A2 resolution for this year is to pursue actively the work of people whose work I don't already know. And this is sort of when you talk about I want to diversify what I take in and things like that, that can become a very limiting sort of, you feel like you're saying, I'm going to go out and search things by this kind of person or this kind of person. And it's not that exactly. The hope is if you make it your aggressive goal to seek out new things and new people and new writers and new artists.
Don't say new best friends.
That it will naturally, that will lead to a more diverse, more rich selection of stuff that you're interested in. And it will keep me from feeling like I return to the well of the things that I love the most quite as frequently. Mm-hmm. Because when you write as much as I do and you talk on this podcast as much as I do, eventually you're like, I
got nothing new.
You know, when I wrote my list this week of 50 wonderful things from the year in pop culture, mm-hmm. one of my favorite things to write, I did get to the point where I was trying not to make them all a distillation of my 10 best movies, my 10 mm-hmm. best TV shows, the things I've said are things making me happy this week. It didn't entirely happen. There is some repeating. But I did try to continue to find things that would be new. So my other resolution is to seek out things that are not already things that I love.
That's a great, great resolution.
Just in general.
I like as a general rule, like, I want to make it easier to come up with what's making me happy in a given week.
Right.
By consuming things I haven't talked about
right.
before. I mean, that's exactly
right.
what you're saying.
Right. And I think all of us have in common the fact that our resolutions revolve in some way around taking in more stuff that we like.
Yeah.
Which I think is reflective of the mission of the show and mm-hmm. reflective of the population of listeners that we have. So it seems appropriate. But next, we're headed into the future with some pop culture predictions for 2013. I can't speak for anybody else, but I do know that my prediction last year at this time was that Melissa McCarthy would get an Oscar nomination for Bridesmaids, which happened.
Ding, 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 ding.
So I give myself a gold star in stating the obvious.
You also said that NBC would not kill Community.
Which they haven't yet.
Which they technically have not.
They have not yet. It has survived. It
survived 2012.
It is coming back in 2013. I'm just saying. So far, I'm 2 for 2.
You are. Those are the ones I wrote down. I did write right. down what we predicted last right. year.
Well, Thompson, how are you doing predictions-wise?
Well, you know, I kind of.
I know you punted this a little
bit. I punted
bit and,
a little bit.
Made a
I did a bunch of.
One,
I did yeah. a bunch of jokes, and I mean, I did imply that Dr. Dre's Detox was going to come out in 2012. Did not happen. It is the Chinese Democracy of hip hop. I did say that Adele's going to sweep the Grammys. Is not exactly a gigantic.
That's up there with
tell you what, Frank Ocean's going to sweep the Grammys, and it's going to be a giant shock. Mm-hmm. What else? Spotify. I did. I punted this one a little bit. Okay, I came up with something.
What do you have for this?
Okay, I came up with a couple of more concrete ones, and I think there's going to be, and you know, Linda, you wrote an essay kind of to this effect, and I've been hearing this more. I feel like in 2013, you're going to see somewhat of a backlash in popular culture against sort of ultra-violence.
I think you're right.
What I wrote down in my notes here is sex up, violence down. I think there's a little bit of a critical mass forming around kind of what you were saying in an essay that you wrote on the blog recently, that like it's a golden age of television, provided you're okay with watching people get shot in the face.
Right. And many of those are very good shows. You know how much I love Breaking Bad.
A lot of those are fantastic shows. But I think you're going to see a certain amount of discomfort based not only, you know, on Sandy Hook, on the shooting mm-hmm. in Aurora, mm-hmm. but I think in general, there are tipping points being reached that are partly that, but partly just the glut of incredibly violent
entertainment. Some of it is just cyclical. And among the TV critics that I know, it didn't really come up significantly for several years.
Right.
And then this year, before any of these particular news stories really started to be a part of this debate, several people that I know, it just kind of bubbled up. And people started to sort of say, like, I'm a little fatigued. It's not an anti. It's mm-hmm. just, I'm a little fatigued. And I don't know that it's noble so much as it is a pendulum swing where people, after a while, want to see something different. And I think that's beginning to happen.
And I think not only your sort of boutique cable right. Breaking Bads, but your crime procedurals that always begin with the corpse of a beautiful
right.
woman.
Right.
And I think that, in general, you're going to see, I think, a pulling back of the envelope mm-hmm. on
yeah,
violence.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then accompanied by a pushing of the envelope on sex.
Okay.
I think you're going to see more.
Where are you getting that from?
Because you got to push the envelope
yeah,
somewhere.
I think that you're asking American culture to become European culture when you say that. Less violence, more sex.
Mm-hmm.
I think America was built on Puritan principles. I think that's a large part of what we produce. And I think that that attitude towards sex and a lack of permissiveness is not going to go away. I'm with you on the there's a fatigue about violence, but I just don't see this country pushing the envelope on sex.
I think at the same time, people do like looking at scantily clad,
sure,
attractive people.
Yeah.
I just sort of feel like the envelope on this stuff is generally being pushed toward more permissiveness.
Right.
I think if you jerk back from incredibly violent culture, I think there's going to be a tendency to push in another direction. And that's what I mean. I'm more confident in the backlash to the ultra-violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, I think we may be more tired of the apocalypse by the end of 2013 than we are now coming out of 2012, mm-hmm. in which we were faced with multiple apocalypse. Mm-hmm. Wait. apocalypses? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not only from the stupid Mayans, who didn't actually predict that the world would end
right,
on December
no,
21st.
They did not.
Anyway,
they did not.
But looking at the previews for a lot of the big summer movies, it is like, Earth has been laid waste to, and what now? It seemed to be like all the movies, and
yeah.
I think we're going to get real tired of that real yeah. fast.
Yes, indeed.
Fair enough. Trey Graham, do you remember any predictions that you made for this year?
I did not do this research. I'm sorry.
That's
I thought
okay.
we were just going forward with
no,
new
no,
predictions.
No,
you said that,
right.
you said that
I bet Thompson has notes.
I did. You said that Seth Rogen would get an Oscar nomination for co-writing 50-50. He did not. It was not
so close.
It was not a bad prediction.
It was not a bad prediction.
You said Jane Espenson. Here's what I wrote down. Jane Espenson, women directors, and other than Catherine Bigelow and Zero Dark Thirty, what do we got for big?
Not a lot. Not a lot. I mean, certainly lots of good movies.
Yeah.
Lots of good movies. But in terms of big
Your
ones
Oscar,
that are. Yeah, it's really just her. But Jane Espenson, you know, did have a fun. I don't.
She's
was
had a
that
fun
web
year.
Series? She, was that web series new this year?
It was.
Husbands?
I think that was. Yeah, I think that was a summer thing, maybe.
Yeah.
Husbands
so.
is a Jane Espenson project that mm-hmm. is really fun and that yeah. everyone likes.
And she's still writing Once Upon a Time.
Yes,
I
she
believe.
Is. Yes, she is. She did have a fun year. You got that one right.
You also said that the Packers would win the Super Bowl and that the apocalypse would not happen. I frankly wish that those two things had been reversed.
Oh, Thompson. How about for this year, Trey? What are you thinking?
This will be the year that either redeems Michael Douglas or forever consigns him to the dustbins of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
because he is playing Liberace.
Yes, he is.
In a movie. Wow.
Yes,
and
he is.
Matt Damon is playing his boyfriend.
Yes,
so this
is
either going to be the greatest thing that has ever been screened, or it's going to be a horrifying train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to find out which.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that's not really a prediction. It's just a sort of flag
well,
in the
what's
air.
Your, what's your pick? Let's. I mean, we're doing predictions. Let's pick
I think
one.
It's going to be awesome.
I think
I'm going to predict it's going to be awesome.
It sounds to me like that's going to be awesome.
There are going to be lots of people like Glenn who will be very happy at the movies this year, because not only will there be some big summer action-y things, but there are a handful of smart-looking sci-fi films coming from directors like Spike Jonze and the guy who did District 9, Neil Blomkamp.
Yep.
So you're predicting it will be a big year for sci-fi films.
Based on the fact that these movies are coming out.
Well, not just a big year for sci-fi, but a big year for smart sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a good year for fans of Korean film, because there are several notable Korean directors who are making major sort of English language debuts.
Yeah, these are not very verifiable predictions, you know. It's going to be hard to say.
Okay, well, here are two. Actually.
Predict something.
I'll give you three.
As well, predicts.
It will absolutely be the year of the Cumberbatch, because not only is he going to be in the new Star Trek movie, he is also starring in August Osage County. So, giant prestige project.
Okay.
Giant blockbuster project.
Okay.
You will not be able to escape the Cumberbatch.
I feel like there have been several years of the Cumberbatch.
Yeah. He's going to be Smaug.
I mean, don't forget he's going to be
Smaug. I know. That's the other one. I think he's still firmly in that cult phenomenon phase.
Well, but he was
right
in
now.
Two of last year's Best Picture nominees.
True.
Sure.
True.
He was in War Horse. And also...
well, but that shouldn't have been a Best Picture
Taylor.
Nominee. Yeah, Tinker Taylor.
Oh, but that wasn't a Best Picture.
But that wasn't a Best Picture nominee,
I think.
Anyway. Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm mixing him up with Hiddleston. God, I'm terrible.
You are terrible.
Yeah.
I'm still pulling for Team Cumberbatch Hiddleston.
Yeah, I gotcha.
We are going to hear from Tilda Swinton something like three times in the coming year, so there will be a good many singular red carpet pictures.
Oh, that's
my prediction.
That's true.
And Jessica Chastain will have a movie opening every weekend, obviously.
Oh, my God.
Some truth to that, too.
Yeah.
Glenn Weldon, do you remember what you predicted last year?
I don't. Hit me, Stephen. I don't remember.
All right. I wrote down here. Oh, something, something comedy podcast. I kind
of
tuned out.
Of course.
Nice. So you said that there would be more comedy podcasts outside of Los Angeles. You said that there would be sort of a New York and Chicago podcasting. You also name-checked three writers whose books you were curious about. They are Mark Lehner, Daniel O'Malley, and good old Nathan Englander.
Okay. I read all three of those books, and they're all great. I haven't seen a huge boom in podcasts outside of L.A., but a huge diversification of L.A.-based comedy podcasts. So, yeah, not going for...
Well, what do you have on tap for this year? What can you get right this year?
There are five superhero films coming out this year. Iron Man 3, Thor, The Dark World, The Wolverine, Kick-Ass 2, and Man of Steel. I am going to predict that the most fun of these five is not the one you think. My prediction, a bold prediction, is that Thor, The Dark World, will be the most fun. Man of Steel will probably be the most stirring.
Right.
Iron Man 3 is going in a very sort of Dark Knight, Fall of Iron Man thing. Exactly.
Ooh.
So, I don't think that's going to be the most fun. I do think Thor, The Dark World, only because you've got Christopher Eccleston and Tom Hiddleston. So you got a bunch of stuns in this
team
movie.
Team stun.
Team stun. And Eccleston is playing a dark elf. Awesome. Dark elf. That's awesome.
And
it's easy to
sort of forget that Thor is a fun movie.
Yeah, it was. I think they're going to probably be playing more to the comedy strengths, because that was kind of on display in The Avengers a little bit. Iron Man 3 will become the second major blockbuster franchise to feature a hero squaring off against a villain who is based entirely on Lorne Michaels. Of course, Austin Powers. But if you listen to the trailer for Iron Man 3, you hear Ben Kingsley saying, "They call me a tourist. I am not a tourist. I am a teacher." So that is so clearly Lorne Michaels. Because, of course, Robert Downey Jr., SNL. The other thing, there's not going to be a Batman mention in Man of Steel. People are kind of talking about that. There's a lot of talk about that. I don't think there's going to be. And there will definitely be, this is not a surprise, there will definitely be an Avengers mention in The Wolverine.
Huh. Mm,
boom,
interesting.
Done. Not really interesting. It's going to happen. It's always happened. It even happened in one that was technically outside of the universe.
It's interesting to me.
All right.
I'm allowed to be interested. Okay, so we've covered what I predicted for last year. I will now tell you what I am predicting for this year.
And you went 2 for 2, so strap in, people.
Sadly, as much as I predicted last year that they would not cancel Community, I think this will be the last spring for Community. And much more sad to me personally, I predict it will be the last spring for Parks and Rec.
Ooh,
I was
afraid you were gonna say
that. And it is already the last year for The Office. And 30 Rock, which means NBC is going to be in the position of trying to really rebuild its comedies. Now, part of the reason I'm as confident as I am that those two will not live very long is that NBC has experienced a very unexpected resurgence this fall. And between not just their football, but also a few other things they've managed to put together and the decline of a bunch of other networks, they actually have won. I think they won the entire fall in 18 to 49 or whatever it is.
Buoyed by The Voice.
The Voice, largely. Football, but also the sinking of other networks. Yeah. Things like Revolution did fine. Go On does fine. Yep. So they have had this unexpectedly good fall, and I think that is probably going to result in them being less likely to keep things around forever. They smell blood in the water in terms of their position with regard to other networks, and they feel like they have a chance to make a push. I don't think there's any question. So I think they're going to start to go back and try to reboot their comedy situation. Now, what they're going to try to reboot it around is the new comedy starring Michael J. Fox, which they have coming in the fall.
Right.
Well, which so far they've just, I think, got the pilot going. But I can't remember if they've actually ordered the whole thing, if they actually picked up the whole thing. But they are going to build around that. So my prediction for 2013 is that you will see a big NBC effort to recover their position in comedy, not just in terms of quality with critics, like which they have had on that Thursday night for the last several years, but also to try to go back to having a popular comedy block. And what they did with the Michael J. Fox show, this is a little bit specific, but what they did with the Michael J. Fox show that's really interesting is you've got him, he's very popular with audiences. They also just cast on that show recently Wendell Pierce, who is on The Wire, who is a critically adored actor.
Right.
So what you do is you get the guy who's maybe one of the most popular people with audiences to ever be on sitcoms, and then you put in somebody who critics will automatically give that show a chance. Automatically. Mm-hmm. Not just because a lot of them still like Michael J. Fox, but also because they love Wendell Pierce. He is a critically adored actor. He's on The Wire. He's on Tremé. Critics will give that show a chance,
right.
Absolutely. So they're being somewhat savvy about that, and I think you're going to see a big comedy push by them in the fall. So that's A. B, I'm just going to go out on a limb and predict some Oscars.
All right.
Not because I think I'm going to be right, but just because somebody has to do it.
Sure.
And quite frankly, everybody's going to be able to do it by the time there's already nominees.
Sure.
And then when you have the nominees, there's going to be like 6 weeks of buzz. And then everybody's going to start to. And by the time you get to the weekend of the Oscars, everybody's going to agree on how several of them are going to go.
Yep.
So I'm just going to call the 5 major ones.
All right.
Boom. Right now, before they're even nominated. Some of these things might not even be nominated for Oscars, but these are my winners, my chosen winners.
Winners.
Winning the Oscar.
Wow, I like
Taking
it.
Taking home the statuette.
Like it.
Here you go. Best Picture, Lincoln.
Really?
Yeah. Mm.
Really?
Disappointed, but I believe it with my heart.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lincoln. Daniel Day-Lewis, absolutely best actor.
Right.
Best actress, Jessica Chastain. That's what Zero Dark Thirty is going to get instead of Best Picture, in my opinion.
Okay.
Best Supporting Actress, Anne Hathaway.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Best Supporting Actor, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
In The Master.
Hmm. That's what The Master is going to get instead of anything else major.
Well,
I think Joaquin Phoenix will be nominated, but will not get it. I think Amy Adams will be nominated, will not get it. And I think that will be its big. I think that will be its big haul.
I think those are all solid picks. But I want to agitate for Django Unchained for Best Picture because
I personally would agitate for
man.
It, but I'm not talking about my. These are not my picks.
You're saying
will win. Yeah. These are not my picks. These are predictions.
Mm-hmm. I do not feel. I mean, and I have not seen Lincoln. I do not feel like it's going to be Lincoln. I feel like it could be. I think you could see a Les Mis.
In my humble opinion, you've already seen Lincoln in your mind.
Yes. Well, I saw War Horse.
And when you come out of that picture, you do not come out surprised. You come out thinking, this is the movie that when they're making fun of big, sweeping
Oscar Beatty type things. They show a clip from this scene. No, they show a clip from this scene. No, that this scene over here. Because it's it's about the violence swelling and somebody saying something about, how dare we give women the vote?
You see this, the other thing is, you see this movie and you don't know how many white actors there are until you see this movie and you're like, oh yeah, oh yeah, that guy. And I will say my favorite performance in the movie is James Spader as the old prospector who locks up the Bradys in the Ghost Town episode. Glenn's laughing because he knows I'm right.
Yes.
So those are my picks. Those are my predictions, and that I'm sticking to them.
All right.
We'll see just how wrong I am. I predict I will go 0 for 5. Well, no. I'm going to go at least 1 for 5.
Anne Hathaway's
going to probably sure. Daniel Day-Lewis. I'm probably going at least 2 for 5.
Those two, are pretty safe. I think you're thinking about it the right way, which is sort of figuring out what your consolation prizes are. Like, right. I feel exactly. I saw Moonrise Kingdom last night, and I could see, like,
screenplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely. No, that's the kind of movie that always gets the screenplay. Yep. That's exactly the kind
it's
of movie
quirky,
that gets the screenplay.
Yep. But yeah.
All right. And we would love it if all of you would come to the Facebook page at facebook.com/PCHH and tell us what your predictions for 2013 are.
Be bold.
Be bold. That's what we're doing. Make resolutions. Yep. Don't drink poison. We're full of good advice. And that brings us to what is making us happy this week. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Well, it can't be the Badgers because they lost the Rose Bowl.
Right.
Can't be the Packers because they lost the first round bye in the playoffs.
Right.
Can't be the fact that my house got robbed since the last time we did a podcast. So I'm going with a song. Terrific song coming out in March, but it is...
Is it a song called My House Got Robbed?
It is a song called What Happened to All the Laptops? No, it's a song. The album is coming out March 5th, but the song is the lead single. It's circulating everywhere, easy to find, by a singer-songwriter named Josh Ritter. Now, Josh Ritter, if you look at the artist pages at NPR Music, Josh Ritter may have the most stories written about him in all of NPR Music.
More than Bella Fleck?
I underwent a big defleckification process when I came to NPR Music. But Josh Ritter is just one of these really, really smart singer-songwriters who just connects with certain people a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And... this particular record is called The Beast in Its Tracks. I'm warming to it. It's a good record, but this single is called Joy to You, Baby. Let's hear a little bit of it right now.
I go to the parties, throw my hands in the air. I drink what they pour me, the cups of who cares. Go up in the night sky, up in the clouds. Fly over the houses and looking down, joy to the city, joy to the streets, and joy to you, baby, wherever you sleep tonight.
So what sticks out about Joy to You, Baby is it's maybe my favorite kind of breakup song. Now, I love your Kelly Clarkson. Mm-hmm. I love your kind of FU breakup song.
Sure.
But this is a mature, grown-up breakup song. There's a killer line late in the song where he's saying, because it's this very generous look at the ending of a relationship that is sort of joy to everyone. And late in the song, he says, joy to you, baby, and joy to me, too.
Joy to the many. Joy to the few, and joy to you, baby. Joy to me too tonight.
And part of what I love about it is it's generous toward his ex-lover,
sure,
but it's also generous to himself.
Sure.
And it's an amazing song. It's already going to be one of my favorite songs of 2013. Joy to You, Baby by Josh Ritter.
Wonderful. Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
You all are going to mock me until I shrivel up and blow away. But I cannot deny, will not deny.
I'm sharpening my knives right now.
Right? Almost apropos. What has been making me happy over the holiday season, during which I stayed home and had a largely solitary holiday, is True Blood.
Oh, I don't mock that.
I mock it.
I mean, I had
I think I mocked it in the very first episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
I had quit watching it a couple of seasons back because it had gotten so completely stupid. I think I gave up in the third year when the fairies were dancing around that Thomas Kinkade painting. But, you know, I've just binge-watched seasons 4 and 5, though, and I have to say that it's kind of embraced its particular brand of crazy mm-hmm. and run really fast with it, and I'm kind of enjoying that.
It almost has to at a certain point, because mm-hmm. that show is so silly, it can't ignore how silly it is.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely indefensible as serious storytelling, but as sort of gothic, funny, weird, where's my next plot twist coming from?
It's making you happy.
It's making me happy. And it, particularly in season 5, they've given Rutina Wesley, who plays Tara Thornton, some real stuff to work with and room for her to stretch. And Kristen Bauer, who plays Pam, the cranky vampire, she gets a lot more screen time, too, and some real character development, which is long overdue for her. Because those are two talented actresses, and it's nice watching them mm-hmm. get some of the screen time that used mm-hmm. to be devoted to Alexander Skarsgård's mm-hmm. behind.
Sure. Well, that's wonderful. I don't mock you.
I mock you no more than I already did.
All right.
Yep.
Wonderful. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
The toughest job in all of popular culture is introducing a new Doctor Who companion.
Yes.
We watchers of Doctor Who are a fractious and passionate bunch, and we like what we like.
Yeah.
And every one of us thinks that the perfect doctor was whoever the hell was the doctor when we were 13.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. Mm-hmm. And when there is a change, we come to love this mm-hmm. companion or hate a given companion, mm-hmm. and when there's a change, we just get up in arms. The recent Doctor Who Christmas special appeared on Christmas Day in Great Britain and later here in the United States because dumb. And they introduced a new companion by the name of Clara, played by Jenna Louise Coleman. She is part a Cockney barmaid in Victorian London who moonlights as a posh governess. All right? So we got Eliza Doolittle and Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And we will come to meet her over the course of the series that will debut in the spring, and I'm just hoping, against hope, that she will also be found to be a nun in Salzburg
mm-hmm.
and a cross-dresser in Paris.
Uh-huh.
The whole Julie Andrews thing. That's what I want. The
right.
Doctor and Julie Andrews saving the universe, I am in.
Wonderful.
They did a great job. The actual plot itself doesn't make any damn sense. That's not it. The interpersonal connection between her and the Doctor is great, and it works, and it's great.
Excellent. Well, what is making me happy this week? As I might have mentioned, I did a little marathon at the end to get to 106 movies for the year. And one of the movies that I watched was one that I had said early in the year I was excited about and then never actually got around to seeing, which is Ruby Sparks. Ruby Sparks is about a young man who is a writer, a previously successful writer who has fallen on hard times after his one big, important, beloved novel. And he is being inspired by his visions of this young woman, and she's sort of his dream girl. And he begins to write about her, and she essentially comes to life. And if you see the trailer, it really looks like...
Terrible.
It looks terrible. It looks like she's the whimsical, you know, it looks like he's going to be the writer and she's going to be the whimsical, fun girl who comes along and sweeps him off his feet. And very manic pixie. I was trying to avoid that turn of phrase, but yes, absolutely. But it turns out that what it is a critique of that very thing, because the movie is very aware. And the movie was written by Zoe Kazan, who plays her.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie is very aware that she is nothing but an assemblage of quirks. And the reason for that is that she is not a real person. She is somebody else's idea of what they think they want. And it's not even just you get everything you want and you're still not happy, although that also happens. It is you get everything you want, quote unquote, and realize that that is not a person, because the things that you will, not to wax too philosophical, but the things that you will love about the people that you meet in your life are the things that you would not have asked for or made up because you couldn't have thought of them.
Right.
Because they're too weird or they're too different or mm-hmm. they're too odd or unexpected. So what you realize is that she has no texture. She has no opinions of her own. She has no inner life. And that is always what is said to be the problem with the manic pixie, but most movies don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie intensely understands that and is doing a critique of that very thing, because there's a moment in which I would spoil, I guess, only this one moment, which is that when she meets the protagonist's brother, there's a bunch of stuff that goes back and forth, and obviously the brother is trying to figure out what's going on. And later there's a moment when she comes to the protagonist and just says, "Did he like me?" And out of everything that happened, she meets the brother, they have this dinner, all this stuff happens. The only thing she really wants to know is, did he like me? Because this young, insecure writer has invented this girl who cares about nothing except to be loved and has no desires of her own. She doesn't, nothing she wants conflicts with what he wants. Occasionally they have little fights, but it's always because of some silly thing that eventually she'll come around on. And so I really, the very end of the movie is a tiny bit controversial. I think some people feel like it walks away from that in its little last turn. But I didn't wind up feeling that way quite. I really do recommend it. It's very charming. I liked it a lot. Ruby Sparks, Paul Dano, and Zoe Kazan are in it. And I liked it a lot. So that's what made me happy this week. I watched it on a plane.
I endorse this.
So I enjoyed it very much. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our producer, Jess Gittner, at Jess Gittner, G-I-T-N-E-R. You can follow our esteemed producer, emeritus, and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music, which you are listening to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Wouldn't miss a few.
Happy 2013 to you, and happy 2013 to all of you, and thank you for being here. And we will see you back here next week.